Good morning. This is another episode of Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine from the Gabriel Cancer Center. And today we have a special guest, Dr. Stan Anderson, my good friend. Dr. Anderson is a family physician with the Jackson Family Practice. And in fact, as of today, he is the new president of the...
I'm the president-elect of the Ohio Academy of Family Physicians, and in August, I will become the president.
In August, you'll become the president.
Right.
But still, you are the president-elect, right? Actually, yes. That's more sexy than the president, the president-elect. And Stan today was... Stan, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh,
and today,
pleasure.
We want to talk about a dear subject to you, which is obesity. Not that you're obese. No. It's because you are also a board-certified obesity specialist.
Yeah, and I believe that as of right now, I'm the only board-certified obesity medicine physician in Stark County. There are two other people that are going to be sitting for the boards in April, and if they pass, then there will be three of us.
Is that because obesity is not a problem in Stark County, that we don't need people like you?
Oh, no. There was a recent website where they rated the different cities, and Canton came out as number 10 most obese city in the United States.
Number 10.
We are in the top 10. Not for something we want to be proud of, but it is something that it is a huge problem for Stark County.
So, Shelley,
we have all the good restaurants here, right?
Is it restaurants? Shelley, I was going to say the reason we chose the topic of obesity in a program that we call Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. This is a prime example. If we are all obese, healthcare cost is much higher. Does that make sense?
Oh, my goodness. Obesity is associated with doubling your risk of developing most types of colorectal cancers, as you well know, breast cancer, endometrial cancer, prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, small bowel, large bowel. It's associated with 27 different types of cancers that it increases the risk for developing. So, absolutely.
Wow.
When I was in medical school, I remember, I had nothing else to do one day. It was fifth grade medical school, and I just decided to sit down and write what are the potential complications from obesity. Can you remind us of some of those? Because I don't think I remember them all.
Well, certainly it affects...
You mentioned all the kinds of cancers.
We mentioned cancers.
Which, by the way, I didn't mention in my collection of medical school.
And well, it's only actually been recently that we've been able to put that data together. But obesity has long been a factor that increases risk for all types of heart problems, atrial fibrillation, coronary artery disease, heart attacks, brain damages. So it increases the risk for Alzheimer's. It increases the risk for strokes. It increases the risk for senile dementia. It increases the risk for osteoarthritis. One of the big problems is that you end up having an orthopedic doctor that's ready to do a knee replacement surgery, but the patient weighs more than 350 pounds. They're going to say to them, you need to lose weight before I will do the knee replacement. Now you got this big dilemma. You have someone that can't exercise, can't move because they have so much pain, and now the obesity is the problem that's complicating it. So
it's a vicious cycle.
It is, and it's frustrating. It increases your risk for most types of arthritic conditions. So gout is made worse when people are obese. In fact, I've had several people who had gout. We got them to lose weight, and their gout virtually cleared up. So it's one of those things that, yes, it affects almost every joint, almost every tissue. And then, obviously, it increases the risk that if you have obesity, you're going to have more problems in the urinary system, increased risk for kidney stones. Basically, it worsens every single organ system. I didn't even talk about pulmonary complications. So people with obesity have sleep apnea very
fatty
commonly.
Liver.
Yeah, fatty liver, the gastroenterology. And then also people with obesity really struggle with their self-esteem, dramatically increased risk for depression, dramatically increased risk for just fatigue. They don't make as much money. People that are obese, women that are obese, make roughly two-thirds of their counterparts that are not obese.
Right.
And so bias. There is this bias. There is this feeling that
they're just not working at all. It's even while they're working, they're getting two-thirds of their counterparts.
We live in a society where we judge people based on the way in which they look. It's not fair, but we judge people. And there is this hidden bias that we oftentimes see. They didn't give me a promotion. They passed me over because of my weight, and it was unattractive to my boss or the supervisor, and I never got the promotion.
But that's only for women. So men can be as fat as they want, and they still make money.
It's more predominant in women. It's not as significant in men. However, what we do know is men that struggle with obesity end up having significant more problems with climbing up the ladder and being successful in life.
Men?
Men, really? Too. Yeah. It's not as predominant as women, but it's definitely an issue.
The classic image of executive is a guy who he cannot button his jacket, and he sits behind his desk, and he covers half of the desk, and you have a cigar in his mouth. No longer?
There still is that, and there's a fair amount of that. And so certainly what we know is that men that are in the prime of their lives between 30 and 50, a prime. I'm over 50, and Nash, I assume you're over 50.
No, not yet.
Not yet. Okay. we tend to gain our weight after we have been more successful in our career. And that's where the weight ends up being a problem for us. So, yes, you end up seeing a lot more men in their 50s and 60s that struggle with their weight, but it hasn't had as much of an effect. But if they end up having obesity in their earlier years, they're not as likely to climb that ladder.
Stan, before we talk about your unique program you have in your practice for obesity, I just wonder, do we have a national statistics on the... This is our program. Shelley and I have this program, Good Medicine, Cheaper Medicine. We zoom and concentrate on healthcare cost, impact of cost on care, all that stuff. I was wondering, is there statistics as to the total dollar incurred or lost in the care for the, not for the obese people, but the additional cost needed because of obesity?
Yes, that number is $1,200 per year is higher healthcare costs in people that are obese compared to people that are not obese. $1,200
so
per year.
Per year. And I assume that's based on data from insurance companies.
That's based on actually 2005. So they were actually talking about repeating that last year at the National Obesity Society meeting. And so the new numbers will probably be coming out the end of this year.
It won't be any different.
It will be higher.
So if we assume that the average cost of health care per individual is like $6,000, $5,000 a year, $1,000, that's 20%.
Yes.
That can be a scary statistics.
Every year.
To know, it's every year.
Every year.
Compounded too.
So it's like compounding interest. It's just against your wallet. You know, and I was thinking too about when we first opened up a satellite office in a different county, I was trying to think, why are the drug costs per patient so much higher? It's because of weight-based dosing. So they're just on the weight-based dosing medications, accelerates the cost.
And the other issue is the volume of distribution ends up being different. Anytime people end up having a lipid-soluble medicine, I probably shouldn't use those words. I should say a medicine that is preferentially going to go into fat cells. We see this all the time, for instance, in testosterone. Men, as we get older, our testosterone lowers. And so as we get bigger, the testosterone replacement is preferentially going to go into the fat cells. So if you get the shots or you get the replacement with the creams, you're not going to have as robust of a response as somebody who is normal weight, because the testosterone primarily goes into the fat cells. So the people who get the shots end up saying, yeah, I don't feel that much different. It goes in the fat cells, and the fat cells biodegrade.
Not to use Latin, but you're saying the bioavailability of testosterone declines in obese people.
In obese people, the testosterone being lipophilic, that is to say it's attracted to fat cells, goes instead of in the bloodstream and then to the tissues where it needs to go to, it goes to fat and it's destroyed.
Stan, another question. are Americans or even the rest of the world, well, let's talk about Americans, are they getting fatter?
So I can tell you the data from 2000 census, 2010 census, and then the census that came out just at the end of 2017. What the census showed was in 2000, the obesity rate was around 26%. In 2010, it was 32%. And last year, it was 35%.
Did we change the definition?
No. Definition stayed the same. We are seeing now obesity and overweight affects 70% of all Americans.
70?
70. 70.
How do they define obesity? BMI of what?
BMI 30 or above, and overweight is BMI 25 to 29.9.
Really? 25. What's my BMI? Am I back?
But it's also... So if you look at... Let me give an example. Maybe this isn't the best example, but look at Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise, his BMI is 30.2. The difference is Tom Cruise works out every day, and his muscle is dramatically higher than, say, my muscle, than the average person who is his height. So the difference is not just the BMI, which stands for body mass index, which is weight in kilograms divided by height by meters squared.
By the way, do you know what the BMI for Nicole Kidman is?
I do not.
I favor her over Tom Cruise anyway.
So, and I would assume that it's in the normal range, but
normal. She's 15.
The other thing is we look at the waist circumference at the belly button. So not your pant size, not where the belt is, but if you measure the waist circumference at the belly button, and if it's higher than 30 inches in men or 35 inches in women, then that is a metabolic point that says you might be suffering with that problem. Tom Cruise's waist circumference at his belly button is 36, I believe. I'm not a Tom Cruise. I'm not stalking him.
Yeah, we keep talking about Tom Cruise. He's not my favorite one.
Talking about Nicole. So.
I won't talk about Nicole Kidman. It's amazing that we bring this couple that, or used to be a couple, yet the allowance when it comes to the belly button circumference, you give allowance for ladies 35 inch versus men 30, right?
Men 40.
Oh, 40. And for women, 35.
35.
Got you. Because men drink so much beer and their belly is more than sun. Is that what it is?
That could be one explanation. what we do know is the older we get, we tend to get more belly fat. And all of the commercials that you saw on TV and radio, not this radio station, obviously, but on many radio stations that say, take this guarana, take this tea, take this magic herb, and it will help to shrink belly fat. It's a lie. It really doesn't have any long-lasting effect. Any effect that you get is transient and temporary, which is the problem with all of the treatments for obesity. People go on a diet, and they lose weight. And when they lose weight, they feel better, and then they go back to their same routine. Or something happens, and they get out of their exercise routine, and they gain the weight back. One of the things you will never, ever see, you will never see this. There's a TV show called America's Biggest Loser. You will never see America's Biggest Loser reunion because every one of them, except for, I believe, three, and there's been over 100 people that have been through that show, have gained every pound back and more. They all, so 98% of them are heavier than when they started on the show. Because they didn't maintain the lifestyle.
So, Stan, you bring a huge, huge subject now. You watch the TV commercials, and they show all these real big people, and all of a sudden, like by an act of miracle or some divine intervention, all of a sudden they are so slim, and their beautiful skirt, by bringing whatever they use. What is a legitimate method, beside my method, which I'll tell you about, what's the best method to lose weight? Right. But what's the legitimate method? Yeah. Who should people believe? Like these milkshakes, I know they're loaded with calories. Does it make sense?
Yeah. So, first off, people can lose weight on any program. So, you go to one of the commercial programs, you will lose weight on that program. But if you don't change your lifestyle, you're going to gain all that weight back. So the really critical point, and so this is a study that was started in 2003 as a collaboration between researchers at the University of Kansas and the University of Connecticut. They did something called the National Weight Control Registry. People that lost 20% of their body weight or more and maintained it for more than 3 years. So they looked to see what's different about those people who kept the weight off. The answer, they're exercising 240 minutes a week. That's their number, magic number. You're not at 240 minutes a week, you're not going to maintain that weight loss. And two, they're still counting the food that they eat. Whether you're using an app on their phone like MyFitnessPal or whether you're using the calorie counters, they're still monitoring what they do. If you don't do that, you're going to gain the weight back.
Shelley, you are an exercise fanatic or freak. When Stan's saying 240 minutes a week, what comes to your mind about that?
That's too little. I take every opportunity to. I mean, even if it's not like I have my workout gear on and actually working out, it's like taking the steps instead of the elevator or the escalator. It is standing up. I've got a Varidesk at work. No longer is my Fitbit every hour telling me I didn't get my 250 steps in because I'm always moving. Yeah. So I truly believe it's definitely a lifestyle change. And, you know, I did that when I was in fourth grade, and I've been that way ever since. So I can truly say and see that, you know, patients who are people who actually maintain that lifestyle.
Stan, my question to Shireer was about, is it the time you exercise? How about the intensity of it?
So in the National Weight Control Registry, they asked people what they did. And the average was a 49-year-old woman who started at 200 pounds and got down to 160 and kept it there for 3 years. She was saying she was on a walking program where she was walking at 3.5 miles per hour. So on the treadmill, you push the number 3.5, and she was going four hours a week. Right. And it doesn't matter whether or not you do 40 minutes a day for 6 days a week, or if you do 60 minutes a day, 4 days a week, or 37 minutes a day, 7 days a week. It was 240 minutes a week.
Stan, I learned in medical school that the way we're built, the way we're created, the way we evolve, whatever, that if we starve ourselves, we start burning glycogen in the liver. And once we burn the glycogen, then we start burning fat. And once we're done with fat, then you end up look like people from the concentration camps. the good thing about burning fat, the breakdown of fat burning is ketone bodies.
Yeah.
Ketone bodies are the biggest suppressant for appetite in the appetite center in the middle brain.
Correct.
So would it be reasonable to say you are better off to exercise when you're hungry before you eat if you are going on a diet to lose weight? Because when you exercise and you start burning some fat, you actually end up suppressing your appetite. Does that make sense?
So each person's different. There are some people that works perfectly, and that's correct. Other people, when they exercise when they're hungry, they lose it and they can't stay with it. So it's all just what your makeup is, what your DNA is.
It means they get hypoglycemia and
yes.
all that stuff.
And they feel terrible.
Okay, so we don't have a lot of time left, but we still have about a few minutes. Tell us about your program.
So I became interested in weight loss when I had several patients that I sent them to the diabetes doctor, the physical therapist, the dietitian, the registered dietitian, and sent them to every specialist that I could think of to help them with their exercise, their fitness, their weight, and nobody was making a big difference. And then I had one patient who came back who said, well, I finally lost some weight because I tried this interesting diet, and my practitioner gave me all of these pills that I took. I said, well, what were those pills? And so he showed me, and it was a whole bunch of herbs. I looked up every one of them. none of them had any data that made a big difference. So I said, so what was the diet that you were on? He said, basically, it was the no white diet. No white diet, what's that? It's basically the low-carb diet, the Atkins diet, the paleo diet. That was the diet that he went on. And so I asked him, so how long did it take you to lose this 50 pounds? And he said, it took me about 6 months. And how much did it cost you? He said, it cost me around $4,000.
Not the diet.
Oh, my.
The pills.
For the pills, which were ineffective in really making a difference.
But they made him compliant because part of the program.
What's interesting is this. The more money you spend, the more likely it is you're going to lose weight. So that's one interesting dilemma. But there's another study, and this is kind of interesting. I know I don't have too much time, but I do want to say this.
Oh, we still have time. Go ahead.
Weight Watchers and Jenny Craig. There was a study where they ended up having 800 women who went through Jenny Craig and who went through Weight Watchers, two separate studies. And at the end of 3 months, they all went through the exact same thing. And they were looking to see what was the weight loss compared to how much sleep they were getting a night. And there was a direct correlation. The women that were getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep were able to lose 20% of their body weight. The women that were getting 6.5 hours of sleep lost about 10%. The women that were getting 6 hours of sleep lost 1 to 2%. And the women that were getting less than 6 hours of sleep in both the Jenny Craig and the Weight Watchers study gained weight. Same program.
Don't you think it's they probably had more time to snack and nibble on things?
Well, certainly
if they're sleeping,
we know,
they're not putting anything in their mouth.
Especially chips and Doritos and all that stuff.
People that don't sleep well don't have that fortitude, that constitutional will to be able to say no when you're really feeling like you want to give in to it. So what we do know is when you don't sleep, you're not going to be able to stay with the program that you're going through.
Tell us about your program.
So, yeah, I started to say that. So we offer a meal replacement, and we use meal replacements that are completely safe, that are a complete nutritional replacement. It ends up being around 800 calories a day. And so most people, once they get into ketosis, where they're burning the ketones as their energy source, they're not hungry, they feel satisfied, and the average person loses about 2 pounds a week. We will then combine anorexic medicine. Those are medicines that help people to not feel as hungry if they hit a plateau. So we're the only program in Stark, Summit, Portage, Wayne County that does that particular combination.
Again, the problem, this is Dr. Stan Anderson with the Jackson Family Practice. Stan, you've been very, very, very helpful. And Stan is telling us about his obesity program. He's a board certified in obesity medicine. Stan, if people want to need your help to lose weight, what should they do? Who should they call? Do they have to be your established patients, or you see people who are not part of your group practice?
So we've had somewhere around almost 200 people that have gone through the program. We've had an average weight loss of somewhere around 35 pounds. Our cost over a three-month period of time has averaged somewhere around $12 a day for the average person. It has been highly successful because we also have a coach, and his name is Joey. So Coach Joey helps people to make good choices and the behavior lifestyle changes that are going to help them that when they get off the program to be able to stay with a way of maintaining their weight loss. So what I would do is I would have simply people consider calling 966-1319, which is our office number, ask to speak to Joey or ask to speak to somebody about the weight loss program, and Joey would then end up getting them all of the information, the costs that are involved, because one of the problems is most insurance companies don't cover the weight loss or costs of the weight loss
really?
Supplements.
That's ironic, though. With the savings you described, 20% extra cost, you would think they'll be interested in that.
So far, as of 2018, they don't cover it. They do cover the medical aspects, but they don't cover the supplements.
Stan, the $12 per day, is that for the meals or is that for the services you provide?
So that's for the meals. That's for the replacement. The services we provide are billed as regular medical office visits.
And where do you get those meals from? McDonald's, Burger King?
No. Those are something that we dispense from the office.
You have them in the office and dispense to them. And those are the only things they eat?
That is the preference. And so whenever people are going to go to a party or they're going to go to a celebration, we have a strategy of helping people. How are you going to work through this? So we want people to enjoy life. We want them to live the best life they can possibly live and not feel ostracized or out of it. So we give people strategies to deal with holidays and birthdays and celebrations.
So again, this is Dr. Stan Anderson. If they want to reach out to you, it's
330-966-1319.
And they can get help. Stan, what is easier, you think, to not to get obese for somebody who is prone to be obese? Or is it easier that you become obese and then you lose weight?
Once you become obese, you now have a set point in your brain. Everybody's set point is the highest weight they have ever been. It is always better. Prevention, prevention, prevention. Then you don't have to worry about the cure. So it is better to try to never become obese in the first place.
Shana, do you think the set point is a body image or Stan thinks?
I think it's a weight, the measurement of weight, how many pounds you are. Now that's at least I'm not X, you know, but I might be creeping up there. And then they don't want to get on the scale a couple of days, and all of a sudden, boom, they're over their point. And then it reestablishes a higher number.
A final question, Stan. Do all obese people know that they're obese?
No.
Because they don't look at the mirror?
Because they don't feel badly. And so how you feel is the key determinant as to whether or not they have a problem. If they feel okay.
Because it's not compromising their lifestyle.
And if everybody in their family is heavy, then I'm just like everyone else. It's not a problem.
So they are within the bell curve. That's awesome. Thank you, Stan. That was awesome. This is Stan Anderson from Jackson Private Practice. He was our guest today on Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. Thank you again, my friend. That was awesome.
Thank you.